You're listening to the Leader Spot online 24/7 at theleaderspot.com. Joining us in the Leader Spot studio is the CEO of SpaceNet, Andreas Georgiou. Welcome, Andreas, to the Leader Spot.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Now, SpaceNet Incorporated was founded in 1981. It's one of the world's leading providers of high-performance satellite and hybrid terrestrial networking solutions for U.S.-based enterprise, government, and small office, small business customers. Explain your business proposition. I know you can do it better.
Well, that was a mouthful. I'm not sure I can repeat it as well as you did. Basically, our value proposition really varies by constituency. So if you're talking about a big enterprise of the size of, let's say, Dollar General or Sunoco or Goodyear or even the U.S. Postal Service, our business proposition is to offer them a satellite-based network that overlays their terrestrial network in many instances so they can have the best of all worlds. Certain applications, data networking applications, are best suited for a terrestrial network. Certain others are best suited for satellite, and when one of them is down, the other one can take over, and that's the basic business proposition for large enterprises. In the case of government, especially when it relates to civilian government or public safety agencies such as police departments and so on, we offer a similar proposition, but there it's the ability to move or provide communications almost instantaneously in areas where communications have been disrupted, either because of a man-made disaster or a nature-related disaster. And, of course, for our home owners or home small office in the home, we have a broadband over the satellite that gives folks in remote areas access to the internet in a very cost-effective way. It's really a wireless way of accessing the internet when terrestrial alternatives are either too expensive or too slow to provide that type of service. So it kind of varies by constituency, our value proposition. But across all of them, the overarching value proposition that we have is really we made a science of the relationship that we build with our individual customers. We have five touch points that our company interfaces with a particular customer. And we study those points of contact, and we make sure that the people on our side that touch the customer are motivated to do the best possible job, because that's how they get compensated. And so we take particular pride at SpaceNet for our what we call the customer intimacy model.
And when you said you've all these different constituents, was there, you know, prior to you taking this position, CEO of SpaceNet, a few years ago, and I think you took it in 2006,
right.
Was there, were you going after one constituency base and you had to shift, and that's been kind of what you've tweaked is who you sell to?
Basically, over time, yes. We depending on what happens in the alternative technologies, we adjust our market model. For instance, as the DSL, which is the telephone company's broadband approach to homeowners, or the cable modems, which is the cable operator's approach to the internet access, as they expand and they get closer to areas that were considered either underserved or unserved before, then we adjust accordingly. What is it that we have to offer to maintain an attractive or a compelling value proposition to the appropriate constituency? And as events like 9/11 and Katrina kind of shape the way we look at disasters, obviously because communications is such an essential part in responding to disasters, we also adjust our market strategy and our market positioning and our portfolio of products and services to provide, to kind of fill that need as we see it. So yeah, over time we do change that.
Mm-hmm. And SpaceNet is a wholly owned subsidiary of Gilat Satellite Networks Limited on the NASDAQ as GILT.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And And in 1982, I read that you pioneered news gathering by satellite worldwide. And this was decades ago.
Right.
Can you think back to kind of then? And how did they do that?
Well, sure. You know, it became apparent, and those were the years where satellite was almost a novelty, even though even today I find people that consider it a novelty. And it was apparent that the broadcasters, the network TV, and to a lesser degree, the cable channels, when an event occurred somewhere where the network had to cover it, there was no good way of dispatching a crew to be on the spot and send back a video for that event to be aired at the next news hour, or even break into the program and just say, "Well, this just in," sort of. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you go back early enough when JFK was shot, it was done by film, and the film had to be flown in and developed and all that. With the satellite, you send out a crew, you do the taping there, and with a van that is equipped with satellite equipment and an antenna that can seek out the satellite, you speak directly into the studio, and they can put you on air right there and then, or they can tape it for later airing. But the timing is really diminished down to practically seconds or minutes or hours as you wish. A similar thing with sports events. By developing this satellite satellite equipment that you put in a van and take it to the event, you're taking the communications gear to the event. Then you can beam up to the satellite the event, back to the studio, and then the studio can either broadcast it to the TV affiliates or to the cable affiliates, or tape it for later airing.
And so, speaking of sports, you did some work for NASCAR Racing. You're providing
right.
satellite networking solutions for Michael Waltrip Racing.
Right.
And so, talk to me about that.
Well, that's a terrific opportunity for us to help out in an event that is so popular in this country and around the world. Basically, whenever there is an event like that, there is a need to communicate with the rest of the world. And by providing our portable satellite communications equipment, you just take it there. They can transmit video, data, voice, fax, whatever they wish. And we beam it up to the satellite and back to a hub that gets distributed wherever you want. And so that was the opportunity to kind of share the limelight with such a popular event.
And we're speaking with the CEO of SpaceNet, Andreas Georgiou. And you've done some public safety. You've had some public safety clients. Talk to me
right.
about you have a big case going
sure.
on there.
Sure. Yeah, we just finished deploying a fairly large network for a major metropolitan police department. I cannot mention the name for security reasons, but basically the idea is that every police department, obviously, or fire department for that matter, they have a communications network, they have data centers, and they process information a lot of times related to criminal activity, to safety issues, and so on. But that terrestrial network can suffer outages that can be regional or it can be more broader than that. A central office for the telephone company could be flooded, or God forbid it could be bombed, or 9/11 showed that even worse than that can happen, or in the case of Katrina in New Orleans, you know, they were out of communications for days.
Mm-hmm.
So we deployed a satellite-based network that really connects straight to the satellite every precinct center. Without being dependent on the surrounding terrestrial telephone network. And we have antennas that were deployed in conjunction with this network that can withstand winds up to and exceeding 150 miles an hour. You know, even major disasters can still be faced with such a robust network. Hopefully, with the funding that has been announced by the Obama administration for the stimulus package, mm-hmm. and a lot of metropolitan police and fire departments and other state emergency agency departments that were short on funds in deploying such a robust network to overlay what they already have can take advantage of this. And we look forward to helping other cities and states to do that.
So were you frustrated during Hurricane Katrina and you thought, I could solve this problem? I wish they would just call me.
Absolutely. Actually, we did help out. We did help out. We have a customer in the South. I believe in Texas they're very big. It's a food store chain called H.E. Butt, I believe their name is. And we equipped a huge van with this type of equipment. And when they had a disaster, they rolled in this van outside the store. They brought in groceries, and they were able to run registers and inventory control machinery. Wow. and all of that. And they were able to serve their customers, even though everything around them was out, including power to keep the refrigerated products safe. So we kind of enjoyed the opportunity to be helping our communities in addition to offering this service. But Katrina was a big example of everything being just about wiped out, and our ability to roll in transportable equipment and put people right up in a communication mode almost instantaneously.
One of the things that's interesting is the kind of the cost of buying your communication. What, you know, in the past, probably in the 80s, only large organizations could afford it, right? A CNN or these major news networks we were talking about. But it seems I'm looking at some of your current customers, and some you've even talked about being local, you know, state and local police forces, et cetera. So you've figured out a business model where you can make it cost effective to smaller businesses. Yeah. So then my question is, are you the only one doing that, hitting, you know, kind of keeping your controlling your costs enough to a client so that you can provide it for a smaller customer?
Or there are obviously other competitors. This is a competitive industry, and there are others that are doing it. They have their own business models, their own portfolio of products and services. We'd like to think that we are the best and the most cost-effective. But you're absolutely right. We can keep the cost down on a per site per month as low as below $30, or in cases where a lot more sophistication is needed, it can be up to $300, $350, $1,000, $1,500 per site per month. It depends on how much degree of sophistication and capability one wants to bring into this. A consumer, for instance, that has a home office, because they are also a business person, we can provide them very, very efficient and very cost-effective internet access with a little satellite dish on their rooftop for as low as $60. We can, you know, can go a little lower than that, and there are others that are doing that. But we don't like to get into that lower part of the market. We would rather stay up on the higher end of the market, because that's just our business model. So for $80 or $100 a month, you know, we can provide small office, home office, direct to the internet over the satellite broadband in a very efficient way.
Excellent. And how is the economic climate affecting your business model?
Well, you got to take a big sigh for that. obviously, a lot of our big enterprise customers have a need for conserving cash, and so any decisions to deploy our equipment and then a contract for the follow-on service either gets delayed or gets postponed, and that has a very direct impact on our operations. It turns out in 2008, we had our best year in the history of SpaceNet, but 2009 is not shaping up as good, nearly as good. The way we try to respond to that, besides cost controlling and all of that, is to see if we find ways to lessen the cash flow impact up front for our customers. So, for instance, we're working with a major bank where, believe it or not, the banks are short of cash. If that is not an oxymoron.
Yeah, right.
but we find ways where partners can work with us. In some cases, AT&T, for instance, work together with us in partnership where they purchase the equipment, we install it, we provide the service, but AT&T charges on a per-month basis. So the customer ends up saving money because of the new way of communicating or the new way of installing a satellite-based network without having to make the upfront investment. So it's savings without the capital expenditure upfront. Mm-hmm. It's a model that we think has a lot of appeal for those companies that are on top of their act, and they can see that there are ways to still benefit from this satellite technology without really having to expend the capital upfront to do that.
So you've had to be flexible, and we hear this over and over again, that CEOs in their leadership have had you have to be flexible, and you have to react quickly
right.
to the changes in your customer needs.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think when you were a younger leader, you that's something you didn't do as well, or no, you always kind of reacted flexibly?
Well, there is no question that, at least in my experience and from my perspective, that as you gain experience, you become more flexible. You learn about the value of flexibility and keeping an open mind. And when you're younger, you tend to be less so. I like to think that I wasn't that much inflexible, but I'm sure friends and colleagues will remind me that I was, and I'm better off for having the feedback from those colleagues. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else is a part of your kind of current leadership philosophy for how you lead?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question about leadership. I think I bet you in this program you probably get more responses of what leadership means to various executives mm-hmm. than you have executives. But in my mind, leadership really starts with the perceived need to change, to bring about desired change. So in our case, in 2006, SpaceNet was just emerging from great financial difficulties, and we had to articulate a vision that it was a call to arms by the management team that we need to change, and let's find out what we need to change and who do we need to help us change it, and so on. So the first thing is being able to articulate a vision for the change. And a reason why change is good. So when you say, let's go take that hill, you know, the question is, why? Why do you want to take that hill? Mm-hmm. And if everybody understands the rationale behind it and the importance that that act will play in the profitability of the business, in their development, in their career development, and so on, then they all group together. So we did that. The second thing, of course, is to gather around you a team that can act as a team, first of all, that shares the goal. And to do that, in turn, you need credibility. Mm-hmm. You know, when you say go take that hill, if people don't believe that you understand why that hill is needed, or why people don't believe that you know what you're doing, or that you are a person that walks the talk, then you have issues. So credibility goes along with leadership and so on. So,
Well, I want to continue this conversation, and I want to ask you about some of those hills you took when we get back on the Leader Spot.
Okay.
The Leader Spot is supported by WOW Services Group, Divine Inspiration Salon, Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, and Dennis Cole Architects. We'll be back after this.
The Leader Spot with Rebecca Blacksmith, now playing at theleaderspot.com.
The The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax Hotel near I-66 and 50 provides state-of-the-art guest rooms with complimentary high-speed internet access, a full-service restaurant, business meeting and banquet rooms for up to 300 guests, with a professional staff that stays focused on the details so you don't have to, and full banquet catering. Call 703-385-7774 for guest rooms, meeting space, or special events at this award-winning hotel. That's 703-385-7774. The Hilton Garden Inn Fairfax.
You're listening to Leader Spot Online at theleaderspot.com. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith, back in studio with the CEO of SpaceNet, Andreas Georgiou. And Andreas, we talked about how there were some hills to climb to turn this company around from a few years ago in 06 when you took it over. Were there hills you had to climb you didn't expect to climb?
Undoubtedly, there were some surprises, yes. That's what makes the job interesting. Having put together a team of talented people and having shared the common goal, when things changed and we had to go after a new hill, so to speak, we pivoted and we took the other hill. So it really boils down to having the right people and building a team cohesion and sharing the end result, the goal. And once you do that and you kind of communicate that effectively to the other the rest of the colleagues in the company, it's a lot easier at task than what it appears. But it's not easy to do the first part. And that's why you have a lot of companies. I mean, look what's happening today. What big disappointment we have even with giants in the industry. What went wrong? What went wrong, in my opinion, was simply failing to share a goal that was well communicated and information was being withheld at all levels, not only within the company, but amongst companies and amongst regulators and companies and all that. And so that's a problem.
So that's interesting. So your lessons learned from this is you want to implement more open communication.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you cannot build credibility of the leadership team at any company unless you are honest and people understand that when you say this is what we need to do, there is a certain amount of credibility behind that. And when you say we're going to do this, we do this. And if we're going to have to change from it because the circumstances are different, then you explain that instead of doing something different than that. You do that in a clear, straightforward way. You build a good rapport with your folks. Then you have cohesion. It doesn't mean that all difficulties can be overcome and can be overcome in record time. But at least you have the best chance of winning when you do that.
Mm-hmm. And apart from communication, what are some of the other things that you think makes good leadership?
Well, as I said earlier, I believe the fundamental thing is to articulate the vision that then gets communicated clearly to all levels, all the way down to the last employee. Then you need the credibility behind the leadership team so that folks can fall behind you. And that becomes very crucial in the ability of the company to attract and retain good talent. You hear a lot about, statements like the company's assets are really its people. But how many people are able to implement a policy that really attracts and retains good, solid people? Because the statement is true, but implementing it, it's not so easy. And you won't find that in a lot of companies. Good, highly performing companies have that. And I was fortunate enough to be brought up in environments where that was the modus operandi. And I'm fortunate enough to work now at SpaceNet, where I believe we have that type of mentality and modus operandi.
And you came in 2006, and of course, we're speaking with the CEO of SpaceNet, Andreas Georgiou. You came in 2006, and you came up with a 3-year plan, and you achieved it.
Yep.
Did you have to deviate from plan much to achieve it?
We did. There were goals that we set that we realized were not achievable, intermediate goals, that is. And we had to, regroup and reset, and we did that. But at the end of the day, we are happy that that we did all of that.
And you won the Via Satellite Satellite Executive of the Year 2008 award because you helped the company achieve one of its best performance years ever in 2008.
Well, let me correct you. I was a nominee for it. I did not.
Oh,
win
you were
the
nominee.
Award.
You know what? Yeah. I had that and I screwed up. You were nominee.
Yeah. Well, you won. you gave me an honor that's a little higher than that, but nonetheless, yep. That was so, and I'm grateful to my colleagues at SpaceNet for making it possible, and to those other colleagues in the industry who recognized the contribution that I have made to SpaceNet in particular and to the industry in general, both in 08 but over the years, and for that I'm very grateful.
Now, in your history, you were a chief commercial officer for SES Americon and its predecessor, GE Americon, which
right.
we referred to earlier. And you have an undergraduate degree from the University of Pennsylvania and a master's degree from Wharton. And you studied as a Fulbright Scholar. And, of course,
yes.
we have that Penn connection between us.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
And we both love the school, too.
Absolutely.
We both really enjoyed
absolutely.
It. And so you have an interesting story about how you weren't really aware of Penn or Wharton,
right.
and you're from Cyprus. So tell us that story.
Well, I was graduating from the American Academy in Cyprus, which is a sort of a private school run by Americans. And during my my national service, I was given the opportunity to apply for the Fulbright Scholarship. Which is named after the late senator from Arkansas, Senator Fulbright, and so I did, and we went through a various stages of contest and all that, and I was told that hey, you want the scholarship and you're going to Penn, so one of the teachers at the school. Saw me and amongst friends there and some other teachers, and he said, "Hey, I understand you're going to Penn State." And I said, "Yep." and another teacher who had gone to Columbia University, he had a master's degree from Columbia University, said, no, you're going to University of Pennsylvania, not Penn State." So I said, "What's the difference?"
The football team.
I had no idea. I had no. That's exactly right. They have a better football team. But the point is that I was admitted into and I was given a scholarship by the University of Pennsylvania without really having personally applied to it. The Fulbright Commission applied on my behalf after they have seen my results from the tests and the various interviews. And so I had no idea. I didn't do any research on schools or anything like that. I only applied for the scholarship. And so it was an extremely pleasant surprise and witnessed the fact that I was not even aware what the difference was between the two universities. So I that was a pretty good story.
And now, obviously, with your Wharton credential, you were going to do a PhD at Wharton.
Yeah, I was in the Wharton PhD programs for operations research. And after I and I was at the time I was also a teaching assistant for Wharton. I was teaching statistical decision making or assisting really in teaching that course, and also taught remedial mathematics for incoming MBAs. But I was also an assistant for the president of the university in the academic planning office. So I had an advisor, and I went to my advisor and I said, look, I was recruited by RCA at the RCA Research Labs in Princeton, New Jersey, and I'm tempted to take that job and not continue for my PhD. I was married, and we had our first child at the time, Angela. She was maybe a year and a half. And my advisor said, look, they're offering you more money than what I'm making. Unless you're interested in writing books and going on to an academic life, I suggest very strongly to you, you take that job. And I did. I didn't think about it since then.
And you're richer for it.
Well, I would like to think so, yes, yes.
And we're speaking with the CEO of SpaceNet, Andreas Georgiou. And so then you went on and you got married and you have two daughters and a son.
Yep.
And so you've found a way to balance career and family life and personal life.
Yes, that is so important. You know, a lot of times you come to crossroads where, you know, a better opportunity may lie ahead or very clearly in front of you, and you have to make a choice. And I always try to strike that balance. And I'm happy for it, even though maybe a more prosperous or richer life defined in financial terms might have been there for me. I define my my success in terms of a nice balance between, you know, the family and working with my wife to raise the children and you know, promoting my career. So yeah, that worked out very well for us. I would like to think. I hope my children feel that way. My wife.
We'll have to ask them, right? That's great. A lot of CEOs talk about that. How the balance of family life and making choices and how important a spouse was oftentimes to how successful you are. I think people don't talk about that enough, and I think it's often very true. And
no, my wife Diane was a teacher, a elementary school teacher. And we're lucky enough for most of our life to be teaching at a school that was about a mile from the house. So she was with the kids practically all day.
Yeah.
Even though they were not in her classroom, they were in the same building. So that was such a fortunate thing for us. So she really played a very important role in bringing them up.
That's excellent. Now, I've got a Forbes business quote for you. This is from P.L. Andar, and it says, "Most of us never recognize opportunity until it goes to work in our competitor's business. Most of us never recognize opportunity until it goes to work in our competitor's business." You have any thoughts?
That is so true. You always say, I wish I had thought of that. I said that many times in my life. I would like to think that others have thought of things that I have done in the same vein. But that is definitely so. The typical reaction when you read a press release by your competition about doing such and such, the reaction around the water cooler is, what were we doing? Were we sleeping? Why? How come nobody thought of it? I wish I had thought of it. You know, but I think that's a good thing. To recognize that you missed opportunities. There are always missed opportunities. There isn't anybody in my book that is so good that they can never admit that they missed opportunities. I missed a lot of opportunities in my lifetime. But studying the opportunities that you missed help you to be the next opportunity that someone else missed.
Yeah, that's a good quote. I like that quote. That's the Andreas Georgiou quote.
Okay, you can call it that.
Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank
and,
you.
Best
Thank
of
you,
luck
Rebecca.
On your future.
Thank you. Thank you.
CEO of SpaceNet, Andreas Georgiou, I want to thank you for joining us in the Leader Spot. I'm your host, Rebecca Blacksmith, makeup by Shantae Evans. Thanks to our production team. All of over 200 CEO interviews are available at theleaderspot.com. The Leader Spot is supported by businesses actively serving the leadership community of Washington, D.C., WOW Services Group, Divine Inspiration Salon, Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, and Diamond sponsor Dennis Cole Architects. I'm Rebecca Blacksmith, taking a seat with you each week at the Leader Spot. It's now your seat.